Back now to Manhattan, New York, and Father Malachi Martin. Father, I've intentionally invited something of the dark side, just, I guess, as a sort of a contrast this evening, as something different to do.
Yes.
Maybe I shouldn't do it. I don't know.
But, no harm done.
But you know what? There's a lot of it out there, Father, and a lot of people think these are kooks or crazy people. And they're not. For example, the guy who called and said he's a vampire, he's been very serious.
I know. He's dead serious. He knows what he's talking about.
Oh, yes.
I take it very seriously, Art, quite frankly.
A lot of people, Father, who are basically good people, think that these realms, these people who are into these things, are not real.
Oh, they are. The unfortunate point is that they are real. That's the difficulty.
Exactly right. And these are the people that when you're doing your serious work, you're working with, aren't they?
That's right.
All right.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Where are you?
I'm in the low desert. My name is Debbie.
Okay.
Dr. Malachi, I believe in both the dark and light, and that they should be together and not split apart like the Catholics have done. And I just wondered, in your studies, I study astrology and not the esoteric kind, and at the time of change, like the one that happened just before Jesus was born, there were big floods for a few years, and about 10 times as many years there were droughts. And I wondered if in your studies there has been reference to that, because most of the references were lost when the library was burned at Alexandria.
There are references. There is a set of men called the Church Fathers, and they lived between 180 and 680, taking those as cliche dates. And their writings are considered to be very valuable for Christianity. And they do speak about such things. They speak about such climactic changes, climatological changes, I should say, and calamities of various kinds with water and earthquakes, and mainly floods and volcanoes. They do. You're right.
I'm curious about something you said, ma'am. You said you work with the dark and the light. How do you do that?
Well, I don't separate it. I think that both are a natural part of our environment. And so, and in fact, I'm really worried about some tendencies with the New Age. I'm glad people are trying to get in touch with themselves. But I'm sure the doctor knows that a lot of the people who are learning channeling from other people who don't really know anything seem to have more contact with things that the Catholics would call incubus and succubus than they are with having contact with anything that would give us valid information. And I just, in that vein, I wonder if he's had to cure a number of people who, well, there are people who say once you open the door, it's really hard to get it shut. And I think these people, in their innocence and wanting to see just the good and the light and the happy, aren't looking at what they're doing.
I know, you're right. There is a lot of innocent mistakes there, which end up in a lot of pain. I think that if we could have a long, long conversation, which we can't have tonight anyway, when you say you work with the dark and the light, you know, those are traditional things within Christianity itself.
Absolutely. I grew up in a Christian household.
I know. By the way, there's a balance beyond the union of dark and light, too, which I'm sure you have come to or will come to.
When I was a child, the people who worked with the person that was the missionary in our town who had been to India accused me of being bodhisattva. So I kind of look at everything because I'm supposed to be here to look at the whole picture.
Well, the role of bodhisattva is, you know, has a, I don't know how to put this, but it has a parallel within Christianity itself. A bodhisattva is just...
Wasn't that the John the Baptist?
Yes,
tradition?
It's a question of sacrificing oneself for one's fellow man, for one's fellow people. There's nothing disruptive or evil about the bodhisattva in my view at all.
Thank you very much.
It must be understood very carefully.
Well, I hope you feel better.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you letting me talk.
All right.
It's been a pleasure, ma'am.
Take care. East of the Rockies, you're on there with Father Malachi Martin. Hi.
Hey, good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir. Where are you?
This is Lance, a fifth-time caller from Park Hills, Missouri.
All right.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask your guest a question.
Sure.
Is it possible for a person to be a lycanthrope and not be evil?
Yes, it is possible. Within the framework of your question, I must say, yes, it is possible. Yes, it is possible.
In other words, can lycanthropy be kind of a gift?
Yes, it can be. And like everything else, it can have a good purpose or an evil purpose.
Father, would you get a little bit away from the phone for me?
I'm sorry. Pardon me.
It's all right.
I haven't spoken with a man with this outlook for quite a while, and I got excited.
Well, let me understand, because I don't understand what he just said. So
would you explain lycanthropy to Art?
Well, lycanthropy, the definition you'll find in most dictionaries, is the delusion a person suffers that they believe that they're either a wolf or a werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. That's you?
Not by that definition.
No, that's not his.
Let's see. I don't know how to describe it in my terms.
Well, do the best you can. Tell us what you think you are or what you feel.
Well, it's mostly in dreams. I don't believe in werewolves in like the real world or anything.
Yes.
But I've had lycanthropy in my dreams. And, well, that was just a question I came up with while I was listening to your show.
Well, I'm glad you did.
It's not necessarily evil, but it would be interesting to find out why you have those lycanthropic dreams. It really would.
Do you want to know, caller?
Yes, if he can answer that.
How does he find out, Father?
He must pray, and him. You see, there's this. But it can be generational in the sense that it can come from factors which he inherits with his flesh and bones.
Wow.
Because accompanying that, there's an ancestral influence. And that's something which I can't perform, you know.
Okay, just to make something clear, I don't dream of ripping people's throats out or anything.
I know you don't. I know you don't.
It's mainly being a wolf with other wolves out in the wilderness type dreams.
That's right.
Sometimes if I do take that half-state form, those dreams, it seems like instead of killing people, I'm saving people's lives. Like I've had a lot of dreams recently of saving people from fires.
Well, that's the good version of it, which you share. That's why I say it can be good and it can be evil.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd want to know much more about you, sir.
So you don't hear a lot of this sort of thing then, Father?
No. There's a certain quantum. I've come across it in a certain amount of people. It's a minority as far as my experience goes. But as I've heard about it and talked with them, but I've always had to inquire about their families.
Mm-hmm.
There's a generational aspect to this, which must be sought out, especially if it's as a negative effect. When it has a positive effect, as it has in this man just said, then I still would inquire about it, because I'd be very curious. It's a rare trait.
I'm learning a lot tonight. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hi. Hello.
Oh. It's me. Oh, hi.
Yes, hi. Where are you?
San Francisco.
Okay.
And my name is Tiziana, and I'm a first-time caller, and it's an honor to speak with both of you.
Thank you.
I had my question for Father Martin is that I needed some advice on how to respond to my five-year-old daughter's question. And namely, she came to me and asked me with quite a serious and inquisitive tone, and said, "Mom, why, when I'm alone, I feel like there's someone watching me?" And additionally, before she even asked me the question, I just intuitively knew that she was going to ask me that specific question. And maybe I could attribute this to the fact that I'm also quite sensitive, and I've had episodes where I've been intuitive, or I'm a psychic, whatever you want to name it. And I also have felt that I have been watched, or I feel someone's watching me. And in particularly, I felt it strongly when my sister had passed away, and it was during a traumatic time in my life. And what I did during those times is just, naturally, I just kind of called out to God, you know, to Jesus, and I felt at ease. Now, I don't think that my daughter's experiencing the same thing as I am. And when she asked me this question, I didn't want to put words in her mouth, and I was kind of, like, caught off guard, and I just told her to describe to me what it is that she was feeling. Was this an animal? Was it a person? And she kind of, like, tried to grasp for words, and she thought, and she goes, well, I think it could be my guardian angel. And I says, well, you know, your guardian angel is there to protect you, and it's there to guide you, and what do you feel? Does it talk to you? She goes, no, I just feel like I have to run, and I'm afraid.
I have to run?
Yes.
That's not necessarily good.
No, that's not.
And then what has happened, I guess, we're going through some traumatic times.
In the family?
Yes, there's been an illness with an aunt, and also my brother has just been diagnosed with cancer, and so I guess I thought maybe she's just feeling all the stresses of what's going on, but she has been coming into sleep in my bed after she, you know, she's 5 years old, after a long period of time, and I thought, I could tell she's probably stressed about something, and I don't know if I should take this seriously, or if it's just a fluke, or could she possibly be feeling, because she's very sensitive, and she's extremely bright.
All right.
She's very artistic.
Okay, ma'am, hold on a moment.
I don't know what you think, Gus. Can we talk?
Yes.
We have time?
We do. I would guess, Father, that if this child is feeling something she feels she has to run from, that doesn't sound like a guardian angel to me.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It sounds she's frightened. But the only way to approach her in this matter would be to get her confidence.
Yes. How would I go about doing that?
Well, I think you'd want closer bodily association with her, like lying in bed together.
Yes.
Eating together.
Uh-huh.
And then talking about objective things together and describing things. Or if you come across some flowers, say what you feel about those flowers and get it to come out like that slowly but surely. Then does she say any prayers?
Oh, yes.
Good.
Catholic, and we go to church and we say our prayers at night.
I'll tell you... I'd like to send you something for that child, the Chaplet of St. Michael. That's rather difficult at the present moment because I haven't got an address. And I don't want you to be broadcasting your address over the air.
Why don't we do it the other way around, Father, and give her a way to contact you?
Yes, well, the way to do it would be my address. My address for the radio is 217 East 66th Street.
Did you say 217 East?
Yes.
66th?
East 66th Street, New York, New York, 10021. And when you write, I want to give you a nickname, Teresa.
Teresa,
yes. So say, I am the person you call Teresa.
Okay.
And I'll know who we're talking about.
Okay, this
all right.
Is great. Thank you so much. I just feel so much at ease now.
God bless you.
Take care, and thank you very much for the call. Repeat your address good and slowly, Father. Because
yes, I will. 217, 217, East 66th Street, New York, New York, 10021.
Good. All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin.
Oh, it's an honor, Art. Thank you.
Sure.
Father Malachi,
yes, ma'am.
Years ago in my family, we met a man that was a healer. And he said he didn't do the healing, but God did.
Mm-hmm.
And he healed me, so of ulcers, so I knew, and it happened instantaneously. Then my mother got cancer real, real bad, tumors everywhere, had 5 operations. She was in bed, and I went to, and she was suffering terrible with pain, and I went to her home and called him what to do, how to help her. And he asked me if I would let him transfer her pain into my legs so she wouldn't have to suffer so badly. Well, it's my mother. I wanted to help her. I loved her.
Yeah.
And I said yes without thinking. I thought I was healthy. I thought, well,
yes,
it would go right away. You know, it wouldn't. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have to keep it. Mm-hmm. Never thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's 15 years, and I got the pain. My mother, of course, died. And
she died of the cancer?
Yes, yes, sir, she did. She got more tumors after that.
Uh-huh.
And they had to give her morphine, and then she passed away.
Yes, yes.
And
all right, you have really struck an interesting question. We're at the bottom of the hour, ma'am, so we're going to have to go. But that's is she an empath? Is what she said possible?
Oh, yes.
It is?
Yes. Oh, yes, it is.
And then even her mother passes away, and she, for life, for her life,
still has the suffering, yes.
I'll ask more about it when we get back. Father Malachi Martin is my guest. From the high desert on a very early Saturday morning, this is CBC. Back to Father Malachi Martin. The young lady who called, or not so young,
have we lost the contact with her?
Well, not in the sense that she's still listening. I think she gave us her story. She asked to receive that pain, and she has had it now all her life. How is that possible to transfer in that way pain, and what can she do?
Well, the first comment to make upon this art is that it's a very dangerous thing to do. And the man she spoke to, not he who transferred the pain. It's God. But you cannot tempt God.
Why would God do that?
Because this is an abuse. He was wrong, that man, in suggesting, it didn't say for a mother anyway.
Clearly, but I don't understand why you say it is an abuse. In other words, this is something she did out of love.
I know, but it was misdirected love, misdirected by this particular healer. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to accept from God and heal if you can by other means, but not by that sort of substitution.
Offering up of yourself.
Yeah, it's not. It has always been condemned by Christianity from the very start.
Uh-huh.
Because the ancient healers, pre-Christian, and then in early Christianity, the Roman and Greek healers used to practice this sort of healing and substitute healing, as we call it in the books. And it's always been condemned by Christianity as wrong. Just wrong, because you don't choose these things. It's one thing to sacrifice your life for somebody else to save their life when they're drowning or they're being bitten by a mad dog or whatever, or killed by somebody cruel, and you let yourself be killed in their place. That's number one. But in the matter of disease, and you're fiddling with God's providence in a way which is not holy, not good.
Okay.
Christianity has always condemned it, substitute healing.
All right. What does she do now?
Ah, what she does is she gets a holy priest, a holy man, to pray over her and give her a healing process. There's no question of any demonic influence here. It's simply a mistake she made, and she was punished for it. She can merit an awful lot, but a good priest should teach her how to merit grace from God in this matter.
You see, Father, I don't understand that.
I know.
You said she made a mistake and she was punished for it. She took on the pain of her mother, or wished to, out of nothing but pure love.
I know.
And she was punished for it. Why would a fair
I know.
Fear of God, punish.
I know, Art. I see your difficulty. It's just that we find out that that's what happens. It's always been condemned by Christianity as something that shouldn't be done.
Okay.
And my Christian instinct goes against it. And I know it's always been condemned. It's not the way to go. Why? Well, the bigger problem is why God allows other things, like the birth of babies that are coke addicted and have AIDS when they did nothing except their parents.
Yes.
You know, it's one of these mysteries of evil. I don't know, Art. I have no answer to that question. I wish I had, but I haven't.
This is the end of side one. Please leave the cassette exactly where it is. Flip it over.
From the Kingdom of Nod, across the country, around the world, and throughout the universe, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the CBC Radio Network.
All right, what about this one? Father Martin, I'm a Catholic, respect you greatly, but you said something that was a bit disquieting.
Yes.
An earlier caller identified herself as not only someone who practices Wicca, but she said that she had left the Catholic Church. You said that was okay. What she was doing was okay as long as she honored Christ. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I heard that.
Or please clarify what you meant. How can it be okay that she left the true church for a pale imitation?
Well, I don't think she left the true church. That's the point. From what she was saying, it seems to me that she was deserting the organization as such. But if she honors Christ and honors his mother and prays, and is a good person morally, she has no more left the church than I have. But what she's talking about is the organization, which she found abhorrent for some reason or other. And of course it's not, if she had said to me, no, I practice Wicca, and I worship the devils, or I worship idols, or I worship this world, and no, I don't have any belief or attachment to the Lord Jesus, or to, as you call him, or the Virgin Mary, or the angels, that'll be a different story. But you can't say you've left the church when you honor these people. I mean, you live a moral life. She has some reason for saying that. I know so many people out who will tell me, I absolutely hate the Catholic Church's organization, its clergy, its bishops, its garbage. And then I find that they're very good people. It's just that something bad hit them. They were maltreated or unjustly treated, or they were scandalized.
Mm-hmm.
And but they're still within the Church of Christ. He still loves them. They belong to him still.
They don't have to be in the organization to be with him.
Not absolutely. They should be. If through some accident, personal accidents, they exit from the formal connection with the organization, they still belong to Christ.
All right. On my first time caller line, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hi.
Hello, Art. This is Keith from Ashley, Oklahoma.
Yes, sir. You're going to have to speak up good and loud, Keith. Get into that phone and yell at us.
I'm sorry. This is not a sound gene, just a portable.
It's all right. Go right ahead.
Listen, I've tried to get through to Father Malachi many times. Huh. I have many questions. I am an atheist. I am not a non-believer.
Yes.
I am not a bad person. I teach my son right from wrong. But I have many questions. Number one, I have a mentally retarded brother.
Yes.
Who has no understanding of right and wrong, who has no understanding of God and evil.
Mm-hmm.
Where is his place in immortality?
Where is his place?
Mm-hmm.
How old is he?
He right now is about 31.
Is he viable? Can he work?
Not really.
So somebody must take care of him.
Yes, my mother and father take care of him.
I know. And when they go, somebody else must take care of him. Well, his place is, I suppose, takes the place of that. They asked Christ about somebody similarly afflicted in the gospel, and he said that such a person is the best, is one example of the way God lets things happen in this world. And the people said, well, is it because of his father or his mother that he's so punished? And he said, no, it's to manifest the power of God. It's a difficult thing to accept, but he has a place in the scheme of salvation.
Okay, Father, I'm also a surgical nurse.
Yes.
And you would not believe the horrors we see coming in with young children that have been abused.
I can believe it.
I mean, I actually saw a two-year-old that the father had taken the child and actually broken its back over its knee.
Oh, my God.
You know, how do you explain that? I mean...
Well, you don't. There's a thing called evil.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing called evil in this world. And evil runs rampant in certain families. And the suffering and the pain and the horrible experiences thrust on the weak and the helpless. It has only served always to drive me into the arms of my Lord, Jesus, and God. I know it exists, and I want to escape it, and I hope never to indulge in it or fall into it, and I hope to cure people practicing it, but that it's there is a fact of life.
Mm-hmm.
That's the world. There's a long story behind that, a long, long cosmic story, which you know probably as well as I could explain it, but it's the existence of evil.
I know, but it's just somehow you say, who's looking out for these children? I mean, they can't help themselves. They didn't do anything to deserve that.
They know they did nothing to deserve it at all. All you can do is, if you can restore them physically, that's one thing you can do. But if, like a little child with his back broken, I'm sure it died.
Yes, it did.
But then, at that stage, your faith must enter. Because when I have come across children like that, for instance, to give you an example, if it doesn't shock everybody listening, I had access to a child who had been sodomized, and she was a girl, by her daddy.
I've seen many, sir.
What?
I've seen many.
Yeah. And she was just a year and a half, almost 2 years old. But she had been baptized, of course. What I do is I associate their sufferings, because she suffered.
Mm-hmm.
I associate her sufferings with the sufferings of my Lord Jesus, who died for all sinners, in the hope that her sufferings can be turned to good use by Christ himself. That's the only... And I also pray to little babies like that. I have a whole list of them, by the way, which I recite every day.
It's sad in itself.
It's very sad. The only thing is that this life is sad in several aspects, and we can't let that dominate because we have a glorious Savior, and we have a glorious God, and that he has allowed evil is one of the biggest mysteries we have to face.
But yes, he has sir, I agree with that.
Yeah,
I have one more key question.
What is it?
All right. It's something I proposed to actually my priest in town. He could not answer it for me.
Yes.
We say that in heaven,
yes,
there's no sorrow, there's no sickness,
no.
There's only everlasting happiness and love.
Yes.
Let's say, for example, take Art, for example.
Yes.
We all know how close he is to his mother, how much he loves his mother.
Yes. Art Bell, you're talking
Let's,
about.
Yes, yes,
yes.
Let's say he gets to heaven.
Yes.
And for some reason, as just an example, his mother isn't there.
Yes.
How do you explain that? How do you account for that? I mean, how can you have happiness
if
people you love are not around you?
Well, the happiness in heaven, first of all, doesn't spring from the people around you. It springs from God. And number two, I really would be very surprised if Art Bell's mommy isn't there.
No, I know. I was just using
I really
that
would
example.
Be. It is. I really mean that.
No, I understand. I was just using it as an example.
Look, it's more likely that she'll be missing me.
No. We won't be missing you. We're going to make sure that you come upstairs with us all. But the point is this, that when you get to heaven, when you are in God's presence, you are absorbed in him. And anybody or anything not absorbed in him, once this cosmos has passed away, fades out of your existence, fades out of your memory, fades out of life.
So everything down here doesn't count.
Well, it does count because it's down here that I work out my salvation.
Mm-hmm.
It counts. Oh, yes, it counts. My goodness. And that's one of the, if I could say it, I don't want to be trumpeting this as triumphantly or invidiously, but one of the biggest differences between the early Protestants, at least, and Catholics was this, that, as you know, Luther, for instance, would say that you can do nothing to save yourself. You're justified by faith alone. Whereas Catholics have always said, no, no, you merit. You can merit punishment, you can merit heaven. And similarly, I must tell you, sir, that if I were in your place in the surgical wards, I would have a little baby family of about 3,000 already that I would have baptized with water, or at least baptized somewhere or other, and that I would have prayed to, that their sufferings would be united with the sufferings of my Lord Jesus, because that's the way I can save souls.
Well, I'm curious about something, caller. You advertised yourself as an atheist when you first called.
Yes, sir.
I understand an agnostic. I understand somebody who has not been able to quite make the leap of faith necessary to be one with God. But I don't understand an atheist. That's somebody, by definition, who believes there is no such thing as God. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I do not believe in God. I do not believe in the devil. If you don't believe in one, you can't believe in the other.
That's right.
You know, you're not a devil worshiper just because you're an atheist.
Right.
I'm a good person. I would treat my son right and wrong. By the old saying in Missouri, I am a show me person.
Yes.
And I just can't quite grasp the concept of faith. You know, I just can't quite grasp it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the old coin trick behind the ear where you say, where to go, I've got it. You know, I don't believe in magic. I don't believe in faith. I wish I could. I mean, I am envious of people who believe in everlasting life.
I'll tell you something.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I tell you something. We said it to somebody earlier who was on with Art and myself. If I would like to love you, it's the beginning of love.
Mm-hmm.
And if I would like to believe, it's the beginning of belief. Because otherwise you'd say, I don't give a damn about it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
So there's something there. And look, I don't know your personal life, and probably God will never give us the chance of consorting with and revealing each other to each other. But he has a plan for you because you're a good man.
Yes, sir.
And you're doing a good duty. And he will reveal himself to you in his own way. It won't be, probably, the way he reveals himself to Art Bell or to me, or to Art's wife or Art's mother, whatever it is. But you have found God already. You're not calling him God. And I'll be praying for you.
I thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. So even somebody who would say he is an atheist is not lost.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Not like that. No. No, the soul is too valuable. Now, the only persons that seem to me to be lost, I stress the fact that seems to me out, is the perfectly possessed. Because that's a total renunciation, but a total renunciation of formal. I mean, it's done deliberately.
What about a devil worshipper?
Well, if he really worships the devil, he's possessed, perfectly possessed. You can't worship the devil, really worship him as the prince, as everything for you.
I thought of, as I listened to you describe a perfectly possessed person, as someone who would not so actively be engaged in worship of the devil specifically, but might have cut a deal.
Well, once they cut a deal, there's an act of worship implied, and usually it takes place.
All right.
Usually takes place.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hello.
Hello. How are you today, Art?
All right. Where are you?
I'm in Austin, Texas.
Yes, sir.
Oh.
Yeah. And I believe it was you, Art, first of all, that was asking why there was such a big change in the Catholic Church. And I was just going to suggest that if you think about it, there's probably no other religion anywhere that's quite as organized as that. So if you're wanting to weaken something, that'd be a good place to hit first, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. He's quite right.
And for the father there, I wondered, has he encountered any things that are left from before there were I guess you'd have to say heaven and hell were separate.
I really don't understand the question fully. Please,
things that were around before there was a world.
Before there was a world.
Yeah.
Well, the Lucifer and the Satan and the other devils that we deal with today existed before there was a world.
Mm-hmm. Anything besides them?
Yes.
Yes?
A whole lot of stuff for which we have no human names.
Oh, so, now there's an answer I did not expect.
Yeah. It's very hard. There's no name. We have no human names because we have no physical images. So we can't have human knowledge of it. It's very hard to explain this. It does belong to the dimensional area of life, but not quite the tri-dimensional area that we know. See, if it doesn't bore you too much, here's the idea that the universe as we have it today is a reconstructed universe.
Okay? Oh, look, this is. I'm going to ask both of you to hold on, and we'll pick up on this after the top of the hour, okay? This is too good to let go, so can everybody hold on?
Sure,
certainly.
All right, good. Both of you, then, hold tight. We're talking other dimensional beings prior to mankind's appearance on Earth. Okay, we'll pick up on that when we come back. This is CBC.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what.